I think it's a pretty big deal. I mean, we still have quite a ways to go before it's a viable actual source of energy in society, but it is a goal we've been working towards probably for 70 years now, or maybe even longer. So it's pretty impressive that they finally, I guess the big result is they got more energy out than they put in, which is sort of the break even point, which of course is what you need if you're trying to produce energy to use in society.
Right. Yeah. And so like, maybe give us a bit of the science background, or the elementary level science background.
Sure. It's actually pretty straightforward. The whole principle, I mean, so a lot of the energy we produce, even in burning gasoline or coal or whatever, you're breaking molecular bonds, and comparatively, the energy is very small. We use nuclear fission, which is what we use in our nuclear power plants around the world, and also in New Brunswick.
New Brunswick, actually, right? Like, yeah. I think I looked it up today, 44% of our power.
Yes, I think it's offline at the moment, but it seems to happen fairly often. But anyway, yeah, nuclear fission, it's all based on the same principle, and it's Einstein's energy mass relation equals mc squared. So what you do is you have some fuel, you want to call it fuel, and you quote unquote burn it, and then after you're done burning it, the mass of the end products is less than the mass of what you started with, and that change, the difference in mass, is changed into energy. So again, equals mc squared. The E is energy, the M is mass, and C is the speed of light, 300 million meters per second. So if you can change even a small amount of mass into energy, you get a huge amount of energy out. So it turns out that what we've been using, I mean, you know, burning coal or burning gasoline or whatever, the amount of mass that actually gets converted to energy is ridiculously small, which is why, when you turn on your car, you don't die, or something like that. And I mean, in nuclear fission, it's the same process, but it's more efficient. It converts more of the mass to energy. So in fission, you take a big nucleus like, uranium-235, which is quite large, one of the biggest that exist naturally in nature, and you split it, and it fissions into smaller pieces. And those smaller pieces, if you add up the mass of the pieces versus the mass of the uranium you started with, it's smaller. So, and that difference gets converted into energy using E equals mc squared. And so we harness that in our nuclear fission nuclear reactors. The big deal about fusion, it turns out that when you take smaller elements like hydrogen and fuse them together into helium, and you also get energy out, but you get way more energy out than you do when you split uranium-235, for example. And the other major benefit is that you're left with helium, an inert gas that doesn't harm anything. There's no radioactive byproducts. So you get way more energy out, and it's essentially perfectly clean. And hydrogen, the fuel for a fusion reactor is abundant in nature. You can produce hydrogen fairly easily.
Okay.
It's a big win-win.
So it has big energy potential, and is it really like actually no waste product essentially for us, or the waste product totally inert? Or
yeah, I mean, essentially you take hydrogen. It's the same reaction that powers the stars. And yeah, I mean, there are no radioactive waste byproducts left over. That said, when you produce a lot of energy in a fusion reactor, if you had a fusion reactor, we don't have them yet. That's probably 10 or 20 years down the road, but you would still inevitably, quote unquote, activate the container and whatever else around the reactor. So there would be some radiation, but there's no radioactive waste produced, which makes, and we don't have to mine uranium and refine the uranium, which is also a huge environmental disaster. I mean, mining anything is bad for the environment. And when you have uranium, you have to put so much energy into to refine it so that it can be used. It's also, you don't have to do that with, we have hydrogen. You just take hydrogen and fuse it together and make helium in a nutshell. I mean, it's a little more complicated than that, but that's essentially the process.
That's our pay grade today, I think. Yeah.
Right.
Okay. So, I mean, and I guess like that, so the remaining question, I mean, it sounds almost like too good to be true, sort of space age kind of stuff here, but
right.
It is still not here. So what's happened so far is that they've managed to do fusion without spending more than they got out. Is that the idea?
Right. So the problem is that when you want to create a nuclear fusion, you have to have ridiculously high temperatures and pressures. So you can't do that in a normal environment. And so you can't use a normal container to create something like that. So you have to do what they do at the National Ignition Facility at Lawrence Livermore in California, which is what they just reported on, use lasers, essentially super high powered lasers, a whole bunch of them, and then focus them on one point and create this. You ignite the reaction, or you can use something called a tokamak, which makes kind of it's a magnetic device. It's a toroid that contains a plasma. It's like a magnetic bottle, right? I mean, anything at this high temperature and pressure, if it came in contact with the walls of a container, it would just vaporize it. So you have to contain it in a different way. So it's really tricky to use. I mean, just igniting the plasma to get fusion out in the first place is very tricky, but then also to contain it and control it. I mean, human beings have produced fusion reactions before, but in a very uncontrolled fashion. And that's what, I mean, thermonuclear weapons use fusion. And clearly that's not what we want. Right. We want to be able to control the reaction and, you know, have it going at a very sort of steady pace. And not some uncontrolled chain reaction that blows everything up. So I just want to leave you with a little, anecdote. So I was reading the CBC article the other day, talking about it. And there was a really good analogy from a scientist named, Ricardo Betti from the University of Rochester, and he likened it to so we have essentially, we're at the same stage we were at when we were trying to come up with an internal combustion engine, but we've just discovered that we can ignite gasoline and create energy from that, but we don't have any pistons yet, we don't have the internal combustion engine yet, and we don't have a car, there's no tires, so we're kind of a long ways to go. But we know what we have to do now. So I think, yeah, I mean, as long as I remember, fusion has always been about 50 to 60 years out. That's what they've always seemed to quote every time. And it just seemed that they kept moving the goalposts. But now, really, they're saying, no, 10 to 20 years, not 30, 40, or 50. So definitely in our lifetime, I think we will see fusion reactors, which obviously for climate change, if we can get them going soon enough, and in the meantime, if we can, you know, mitigate the problems that we have, this could really be something that could save us if it gets going soon enough. So it really is a huge deal.